We're talking about entrance to US universities from Division 1 to Division 3. So if you have any questions on that, we have Peter Davos and Suzanne Ryan in the studio with us. And we were just talking earlier on, weren't we, about, you know, getting everything else in place, the academics, the extracurricular, the college interview. But there's two other big sort of potential barriers to entrance. One of those is the visa, and the other one is the cost. So let's take visa issues first, because I know, Suzanne, you dealt a lot with this. And actually, it's pretty formulaic, but like everything else in life, you need to be prepared and you need to understand what they're going to ask you about.
You need to understand, once you are admitted to a U.S. university, that university or college issues your I-20 to you. That I-20 has a number in the upper right-hand corner, and that allows you to make your appointment with the nearest U.S. consulate or U.S. embassy for your interview. So apply early, because you do not want to be down to your last 30 days in applying for your F1 visa.
Yes, and I've seen that myself personally. Very, very talented students. They've done all the hard work. They've gone through the process. And then after the interview, they're like, oh, but, you know, I'd like to come in a couple of months. How does that happen? And they're behind the curve then.
Exactly. So you want to apply. First of all, apply to your college or university early. When they issue your I-20, within 120 days, I believe it is, you can then make that appointment for your visa interview. The U.S. consulate, as of last year, would not give you an interview outside of that 120 days. You had to be inside that window. And it's a case of you walk in, you are prepared, and the visa officer will speak to you. You probably will have 1 minute, 1 to 3 minutes in an interview. Don't expect any longer. They ask quick questions. They want to know who you are, where you are in life, where you plan to go for school, how do you plan to get there, what are you going to study, the basics, and you either receive your visa at that point in time or you're denied.
Yes, and like you say, like everything in life, you just be prepared, understand.
Be very prepared.
And take the advice. And we'll come on to cost in just a second, because obviously that's the other major factor that maybe will prohibit some people from, you know, getting into that U.S. university. But somebody's just written in, they said, good afternoon, they've joined us a bit late. So don't worry, you can listen again on the podcast, because lots of good information coming out this afternoon. But they're saying their daughter's completed the IB diploma, she completes it next year, and they're looking at U.S. universities. She's decided to take up business, media and communications. Does she need to take any entrance exams for such courses?
Well, she won't need to take entrance exams for those courses, but she'll need to take the general entrance exams required of all international applicants. So depending on her nationality, if she's a non-English speaker, she's going to take either the IELTS or the TOEFL, which are English language tests. Those are very important. Those will be required of all U.S. universities. Also, she should take the SAT, the standardized, well, it just stands, it doesn't mean anything anymore. It used to be standardized aptitude test, but then they got rid of the aptitude part. U.S. universities don't require SATs from many international applicants. The elite ones do, but they're still very highly recommended. So if you can take the SAT and score well on it, then it's really going to help your chances of admission. And that's offered 6 times a year here in Dubai.
And also maybe these AP courses that you were talking about previously as well.
Right. If she's taking the IB program, she's taking a very rigorous course load. So she's probably going to be a candidate to take AP classes. But the IB in and of itself is recognized as being, let's say, a replacement for the AP courses or a substitute. It's a very good substitute.
Actually, that's a good point, because I don't know, I don't think we covered it earlier on, but if somebody's doing A-levels, for instance, is that also kind of exempt them from the AP courses, or do they need to do them as well?
A-levels equal grade 13. So a student with top A-level grades, and we always look for letter grade of C or better, would not need to take anything else. AS levels equal 12 years of high school education. So we looked for, if a student had C or better on AS levels, possibly took the TOEFL, I always look for a TOEFL or an IELTS, the minimum standards in the U.S. are, for most universities, 80 on a TOEFL and 6.5 on an IELTS, the academic version. That student was generally considered in the top maybe 30%, Peter, would
yes,
you think?
Yes, absolutely. If you're talking about the elite universities, there are obviously higher standards, but if you're clearing 80 on the TOEFL, you're fine.
Yeah, and also, to be quite honest, and I've seen it myself, is you want to be able to do the course. You've paid all that money, you've put in all the effort, you want to be able to understand it, and you want to be able to interact fully with the course. So as an individual, you want to be sure that you're going to cope with the English language.
Yes, you do, and more so than speaking and listening, reading and writing is incredibly important to U.S. colleges and universities.
Yeah. So you know, as you say, to get a good score there and make sure you're prepared, as with other things. Let's get back to just another quick question, because I know we covered this before, but there's a lot of people trying to make decisions between A-levels and IB now, and they have different timings in terms of when they're accepted. So it goes back to your previous point that you know, certain people were worried that they were taking A-levels, they were out of sync with the U.S. university program. But you're saying effectively it reflects 1 year on.
It does. A-level results come out in late summer, I believe. The IB results are when you finish school and you've completed your IB diploma, and hopefully you are doing an IB diploma. But the A level itself is grade 13, so is not required by a U.S. university. AS levels are required.
Yeah, so you're all right on your timing,
yes.
And your mock grades would be taken into account.
Predicted grades are also very welcome.
Yeah, okay. Let's get back to cost, because we said how important it is. Let's talk through, obviously, if money is no object, then I guess you just apply to the university of your dreams, or the one that fits you academically and personally. If you're on a tighter budget, how can you approach the U.S. educational system?
Well, it really depends if you're an international student or an American student. So if you're an American student, American passport holder, you have lots of aid available to you, federal aid, institutional aid, need-based aid, so you have more options. For the international student, you are more limited. One of the most important parts of your application, at least from the university's perspective, is going to be your actual financial statement. It's a required part of the application. They're going to want to see that you have enough funds in a bank account to cover your first year costs, not only for tuition, but for books, living expenses, food, travel, stuff like that. Now, international aid is available to students at the best endowed universities, so the richest ones. Harvard, Princeton, Yale, Swarthmore, which is a small liberal arts college, they treat international applicants the same as American applicants in terms of aid. But there are also some other schools in the U.S., again, schools, this is such an American colloquialism, when we say schools, colleges, and universities, that do offer significant aid for international students. What are these schools? Skidmore, Trinity, Bates, Colby, Williams, Amherst, Wesleyan, Vassar, all these schools are offering about $50,000 in aid for accepted international applicants, which is quite a considerable amount of money when the average private education is running somewhere between $60,000 and $65,000 per year for 4 years.
Yeah, okay. I think that's very clear. And like you said, the minimum is the first year. But if somebody's obviously, you know, you don't want to just take the first year, how do they try and secure? Can they try and secure that funding once they're at the college? Is it easier then, or is it about the same?
It's usually a replaceable scholarship. You maintain your designated grade point average, and your scholarship is replaced every year.
So that's the hurdle, is getting in, providing the first year, and then the scholarships hopefully will
kick in. Well, the scholarship kicks in the first year. So you are accepted based on on your grades, but then awarded the scholarship during the first year. You must maintain your GPA to maintain your scholarship.
Okay. So I think that's fairly clear. And a lot of people are asking, they're really welcoming the advice you're giving and saying, can they contact you? So needless to say, as always, we will put up Peter and Suzanne's details so that you can either contact them directly via email if you have any specific questions, because I think it's very important, because a lot of these questions are quite technical and everybody's an individual, so they'll have different types of questions. But finally, I mean, let's just round it off, Suzanne, with all the years of experience that you've had, let's just recap again, because some people are just tuning in, what they need to do. What is the step process to apply for a U.S. university?
Go on the internet, look for the college or university that you want to attend, that you think you might want to attend. There's rich treasure of information online. Apply early. Use the Common App, what we call the Common App. Apply to a multitude of schools. Decide if you want larger, smaller. How close is the school to an international airport? Most people don't think of that. You've got to get out and come home at some point in time. So you want to be relatively close to an airport. Do you want cold or warm? Do you want urban or rural? Think of all these things. What do you really like? And then it boils down to, what do I really want to study?
Hmm. And Peter, so that's sort of general advice. I know that you specialize in sort of the top tier universities specifically. If somebody's really going for the Harvard or an equal school to that, what should they be doing? What kind of track should they be following?
Actually, I deal with students who apply to community colleges as well as the elite ones, so I try to give advice to everyone. But if you are looking for advice for the elite schools, you have to start thinking about the criteria that we already discussed and how they're going to assess you well before you enter high school. You're laying the foundation in middle school. For example, if you don't take algebra in eighth grade, you're not going to be able to take calculus in high school. That's going to hurt your chances. If the colleges are assessing you on 4 years of your extracurricular activities, 4 years of your academics, 4 years of everything, you can't wait until your final year to start thinking about these things. Start thinking about them before your first year. And prepare.
Okay, well, I think that's really sound advice. Thank you so much for joining us today. We've had Suzanne Ryan, who's the Director of International Admissions for International Horizons College, and Peter Davos of Carrion College Advisors.